right, folks, welcome back. This is Mark Steiner doing our Happiness Spring Membership Drive. I want you all to call 410-319-8888. And we are going to talk about happiness here for this hour on the Mark Steiner Show. And it was inspired, actually, Victor Holliday, who is our membership director, was talking about happiness in terms of the Constitution. Everybody has this right to happiness, the pursuit of happiness, it says, in the Declaration of Independence that Thomas Jefferson threw in. So we want to explore what that phrase really means. We always hear it repeated. We don't explore it in its depth or its history. We don't think about what it really means to say the pursuit of happiness. What does that mean? And so we have gathered a great panel together. And I'm going to encourage you all, by the way, to call at 410-319-8888. You can make your pledge and then tell whoever answers the phone what you think happiness means. What does the pursuit of happiness mean? 410-319-8888 is the number you can call. And by the way, when you make your pledge, you can also get any book that we've done this week as your pledge of support for $120 or more. $100 or more. 410-319-8888. So please make those calls. And let me just say very quickly, you can join Brittany Colbert. Koulibaly, did I say her last name right?
Koulibaly.
Koulibaly, thank you. Koulibaly. Brittany Koulibaly, who said that she listens to us since she was in elementary school and has learned so much. Brittany Koulibaly, thank you so much, Brittany. That means a great deal. And she came in at the happiest level and is going to have the dinner and a book. And more. No, not just going to have the book. Good to have you here. So
that's what makes her happy.
That's what makes her That's what and makes me happy. And that's the voice of Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Assistant Professor of American Studies at UMBC, author of the book Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics, and Africana Communities. And I remember that conversation we had about her book to this day. It was a great show we did together, among the many we've done together. Mm. Jeff Singer's back in the studio, of course, founder and executive director, former executive director of Healthcare for the Homeless, now teaches at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. Alex Boston is with us in studio. He's a former director of homeless services for Baltimore City and former country director for the Peace Corps in Kyrgyzstan and Jordan. What's a nice boy like you doing in Kyrgyzstan? So there we go. So,
being happy and having fun.
410-319-8888 is the number here. That's a long trip from the west side of Baltimore to Kyrgyzstan. So let's think about this pursuit of happiness, because we think about that all the time. When you reflect on that, what do you think that means? What do you think it meant then? In the context of who this country was at that point?
I think it does mean freedom, and I think that's what our founders wanted it to mean. I think where we are now is that we just see freedom in very different ways. And we want to, in some respects, I think we've moved away from what the original founders wanted to see in terms of this idea of freedom, because at the same time of encouraging freedom, we've created so many social hierarchies that make it difficult to actually have the freedom to do much of what we would like to do. And so, if, of course, we think about where we are right now in our society with gay rights and how we are dealing with the same-sex marriage issue. Many people see that as a freedom, but there are just as many people believe it is against much of what our basic principles are, founding principles are in this country. And so that creates this tension among us as Americans that really raises questions about what really is freedom in our society.
And, you know, I would say,
Alex,
I think
Boston,
when the founders, they're part of their notion was, I think, freedom to pursue one's aspirations. And I think if today that means so many things, because if people don't have basic necessities, how can they be free to pursue whatever their aspirations might be? And I think those aspirations really do play into what makes individuals happy. And I mean, I think it's the sort of personal, what it means to you to be happy, but also how you interact with the community around you as well.
I have something to say about both things you just said. Jeff?
Well, there was a 19th century philosopher who said that the ideas of the ruling class are always the ruling ideas of the period. And the period when the Declaration of Independence was written was a liminal period. We were changing from a rural agrarian kind of economy to a more advanced capitalist economy. And these changes were not only fundamental economically and politically, but intellectually. as well. So the idea of happiness, I believe, at that time was also evolving from a communal and civic virtue. Happiness was something that an entire society needed to do together, to an individual issue of happiness, because, again, we're fragmenting society now. People are leaving communities, moving into cities where they may be very isolated, alienated. So I think that's also – you've all mentioned this. That one of the key dynamics that's happening here is the movement from the idea of civic and social virtue, that we have to do these things together in order to be happy, to an individualistic approach to happiness in which we're trying to accumulate as much as possible all by ourselves.
Well, we've all three said a lot here, and we're going to take a brief break and come right back. Am I right about that? And talk about your radio station, WEAA, at 410-319-8888. Stay with us. All right, we are back here with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Jeff Singer, Alex Boston, as we pursue the pursuit of happiness and see what that really means in our lives and what was really meant by all of that and what the founders meant. You know, I mean, one of the things people talk about is that they look at these the founding fathers of this country and their pursuit of happiness, and that part of that had to do with they were talking about property, right, and substituting happiness for property. You had some thoughts about that before we went on the air, Alex.
Well, I did.
No, they're not there anymore.
No, they're there. They're there. I mean, I think that the whole notion of what they were trying to do was filled with contradictions, certainly because of the way in which Native Americans in this country were treated, as well as the fact that they owned slaves.
Right.
And if you were to talk about these high ideals in the Declaration of Independence in terms of property, I think then it's very explicitly connected to the fact that they owned human beings and they, you know, treated the native population in this country as, frankly, as being subhuman. So I think they were able to distance themselves a little bit from that by using that word happiness, which is interesting. But, you know, I think that's – I think if you look back in history, history is filled with contradictions.
Absolutely. But I think property limited what we saw ourselves as aspiring to. And that may have been why we shifted away from utilizing that term to the pursuit of happiness, to realign with the notion that we are freeing ourselves from who we believe to be our oppressor and creating a space for us to do life the way that we want to. And so that became this pursuit of happiness, which, whereas property seemed to constrict us in ways that I think they wanted to avoid.
And you know, I would just say that I think so much of what the founders were struggling against had to do with being taxed without representation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, that goes to the notion of wanting to get some, keep their property and also get something back for, I guess, being a British citizen, which they felt they weren't getting. So
right.
That's a point.
All of that being true, let me add that this is the period when property relations are changing dramatically as the economy is changing. Until the middle, early part of the 19th century, there was almost no homelessness. The concept didn't really exist because everyone could stake a claim to a piece of property and build a house on their with their neighbors generally, and you'd have a little place to live. It might be mean, but you had a place to live. But as property relations changed, as the economy changed and people moved into the cities, then in order to have a place to live, you had to rent from somebody.
Right.
And that's when homelessness began to emerge. There are stories from New York City where there are tens of thousands of people who are sleeping in Central Park by the middle of the 19th century because they can't find a place to rent that they can afford, or they're evicted from their place to rent. So property relations are becoming intimately intertwined with the very quality of people's lives, with their pursuit of happiness.
So is part of the confusion that we have kind of completely individualized in America this idea of happiness?
Absolutely.
That it's me, it's what I can attain, it's what property I can own, it's how much I have. Is that what has happened to us?
I think so. I think so in so many different ways. What I've witnessed.
Okay.
I've witnessed as a Peace Corps country director.
Yeah, I was about to ask.
Young people who have chosen to volunteer 2 or more years of their lives to be part of something that's bigger than themselves. And I think that notion of happiness is something that, frankly, these days is rare. Because if you look at the total population and the messages that we receive from the media, it's exactly the opposite. It's what we can accumulate. That's what makes us happy. And what I've seen is people who've wanting to be part of something that's bigger than themselves, giving back to, in the case of Peace Corps, to the global community, mm-hmm. and bringing us closer together.
Well, you know, that I was thinking about that. I mean, that I have a nephew who's in the Peace Corps now, in Indonesia, and I think of all the people I know who have been to the Peace Corps and what people have, mm-hmm. Giving of themselves and also gaining something, because when you give, you get something in return. It's a dialectic process. It's not a one-way street, you know. And people grow from that giving. And I think that's something that we don't get. We think that the giving is charity. When it's not charity, it's part of growing the human spirit.
And that's, I think, so many times volunteers would tell me that they got so much more from the people that they worked with and the communities they were placed in than they were giving back.
So let me ask this one question. I want you all please chime in, but this is for Alex. I'm just curious when you said this. So what did happiness mean, your interpretation, which you could see, to Jordanians and the people who live in Kyrgyzstan? What do you call Kyrgyzstan? Not Kyrgyzstan.
Kyrgyzstan.
What did happiness mean in those cultures?
Well, I mean, I think that what I saw and what volunteers would recount to me is that people wanted to be able to raise their families in a safe environment, provide for their children, help their children have better lives than they did. And I would say, particularly given that I served in 2 predominantly Muslim countries, what's portrayed in the media here about people in Muslim countries is very different than what you see when you're living in these places. Right. And the bottom line, I think, is that people are people, and people want the same things and aspire to the same things generally, which is they want to be able to raise their families and make a better life for themselves and their children.
Yeah. I mean, as you were talking, I thought, check, check, check. Those are all the things that I want as well. I mean, it's a different culture, clearly. Mm-hmm. There are different circumstances, and certainly socioeconomic status plays a role, a significant role, in how we interpret that. But all of that is consistent with what I think most of us in life would like. The way that we express it looks very different, however.
And let me supplement that. Because there are essentially in the world 2 ways of understanding ethics or morals. And the Western way is to talk about individual rights. And that's consistent with the way our economy has grown too. But the generally Eastern or African way of discussing these things is often about community. And there's a Yoruba sentiment that I am because we are. And we've all heard the idea that, it takes a village to raise a child. But that's really central to the philosophies of places where the individualist capitalist economy and ideas have not yet dominated. The idea that we all need to live together and help each other, and that's what happiness is, rather than the idea that the more Cadillacs and second homes that I can accumulate, the happier I will be.
I am, so we are.
Yeah.
Yoruba. I love that. I mean, that says a great deal. And I was thinking about it hit me as you three were talking, that we're talking about the Declaration of Independence and the pursuing happiness. Maybe the operative word there is not happiness, but it's pursuing. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that individuals have to pursue, have to go after, have to get everything they can get, mm-hmm. gather in, build property, build. That is the pursuing part. You're always kind of chasing happiness rather than existing and being and living a life that creates happiness. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah. It's a little deep for a 10 o'clock in the morning. But no, I agree. but it is the idea of pursuit is consistent. But it's consistent with a capitalist society, right? That we are always pursuing something, that we are trying to attain more and more. And whereas the concept of happiness itself is a state in which you exist in. But pursuing that state means that you're always doing something to achieve it, and then we die, right? Instead of enjoying the space that we're in, because we can be happy in whatever state we're in.
Right.
But it depends on how we have socially constructed what that concept of happiness looks like. And for the most part in America, that looks like, you know, being a property owner, you know, having the 2.5 kids and the multiple cars in the yard and possibly even private school education for those children to get to college or get to the next level. And for a lot of people, that's not possible. But even if it were possible, it doesn't mean that it represents your happiness, right? It doesn't represent your happiness.
And I think if you were to ask a child, what do you want to be when you grow up? In our society, it will always be, well, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, policeman, what have you.
Right.
And the simpler answer to that is, you know, I want to be happy.
That's what Pharrell says.
Well, I think that is. I think that is it.
And speaking of Pharrell, we will be right back. 410-319-8888. We're going to talk about happiness.
Going to shift just a bit because I've thought about this family quite a bit. The family who decided they were taking their children on a trip around the world on their boat. And of course, they had ran into an unfortunate situation and ended up losing their craft and also having to rescue the family, in particular the daughter who was ill. That family, to me, was one of those shining lights of someone or a family who had chosen to live happiness in a particular way. But I've been amazed at how we as society have responded to that family to say that what they had chose to do was, not wise for their young children, that it cost taxpayers a significant amount of money. And so I think in some respects that hinders many of us from making choices to be happy, because that happiness doesn't look like everyone else's happiness. It's not a part of those social constructs of this is how we do happiness. You go and get the multiple Cadillacs. You go and get the mini mansion. You go and have your children in private school education. If it doesn't look like that, we seem to be very critical of what that happiness is. And that, to me, has shifted from what I've always believed that line about pursuit of happiness was in our Constitution.
Wow. Thoughts on that, gentlemen?
I go back to my time with Peace Corps, and I think that, you know, the fact that you have young Americans and older Americans choosing to go overseas and live in a community they've never seen before, they're making different choices. And some people support those choices. Oftentimes, their families would be concerned about the choices they had made. Is it a dangerous place? Why are they doing this? It even came from the other side in terms of the people in the host community, wondering why someone would choose to leave their home and come and live in another place that they didn't, you know, that they didn't know anyone in. So, but I think it is. It's about making different choices, the choice that's right for you. And again, so many times it's not supported.
To be able to make those choices and not apologize for them. That's
absolutely
happiness.
Right. And happiness can mean a lot of things that aren't material as well. I was thinking about this last weekend. And where we live, there's all these vines that are growing up and strangling these trees. And they're from some other, you know, these invasive species, some thorny, some not, and some poison ivy. And they grow up and they're killing these gorgeous dogwood trees in the Forsythia, and they're just killing it. And so what we did, we spent these hours together digging up these things and destroying these weeds and watching these trees, you
come
know,
to life.
Come back. And I was, so I said to Valerie as we left, I said, I really felt good. I felt like I gave life to this tree, helping it live again. You know, so we would not, you know, it was her idea. She was begging me for months to do this, and finally said, yeah, let's do it. And just so happiness comes in lots of ways. You know, happiness to me is like the other day, this woman came up to me in the street, and she had to get to Hannah More, and they wouldn't take her in a city shelter because she had too many kids. And says, can you drive me to Hannah More? I said, no, I can't drive you to Hannah More. I was going somewhere else. But I, with getting her on the subway and giving her the money to get there, that to me creates happiness. You know, if they were shocked, made their day, you know, and they were going to have a shelter for the evening. But that's the kind of stuff that, you know, kind of breeds happiness. It's not just all about how much money I can pull into my wallet.
Well, I think it's also that actions that come from the heart produce happiness. And, I mean, that's an example of an action that came from your heart, Mark.
You know, one of the things we talked about earlier about happiness is, and we equated with property, the native people who lived here, the people who lived in America, what we call America, didn't have a notion of private property. We own this land. I mean, we may have owned possessions, hides, whatever it is we have. I mean, people traded things they made and they gambled like every other society did. But the notion of owning masses of property and the earth didn't exist.
Because it wasn't theirs to own.
It wasn't theirs to own.
Right. Right.
And many of the enslaved Africans who were enslaved came from cultures that didn't have the idea that you could own the earth either.
That's right.
That's right.
You know?
Okay, great.
And I think that's this clash from the very beginning. And, you know, this book we're doing tomorrow, which is about happiness, is about love and the Underground Railroad. I started really thinking about this conversation today and about, even within enslaved and oppressed people, people finding happiness. In their
because
community.
It's a state of consciousness.
Right.
That's what, and so the earlier individual that pledged and talked about metaphysics, I mean, I think that's key to understanding, again, that idea of happiness, because it's a state of consciousness that you can have happiness even in the midst of wherever you happen to be, right? It still exists, and it doesn't have to be something that you necessarily are always pursuing, because you can enjoy it there. And I think pursuing certainly encourages us to seek more of happiness or more of whatever it is that you want to gather or attain materially. But in terms of being able to be happy, we don't have to wait to be happy, that it can be a space that we occupy wherever we are.
No, and I think a big part of that is having the ability to live fully in the moment,
yes,
where you are,
yes,
and engage fully with the people around you and with your community. And I think if you're constantly looking to the future and aspiring for other things, I think you sort of compromise your ability to do that.
I feel like, just as a personal perspective, very quickly,
yeah,
Mark,
yeah.
I feel like I'm in a similar space right this minute, where I'm in a particular space where I'm grieving over the loss of my dad, but that happiness that I'm still able to exist is the fact that I have a job that affords me the opportunity to take a semester off and to spend that time with my mom and the rest of my family who I am away from in another state. So the fact that I get to have that in this moment is my state of consciousness of happiness, even though it doesn't look like what anyone else would think it should.
And in the midst of the pain of the loss,
yes,
of your dad.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right, right.
I have yet another example of that. I've been walking the picket lines with the Hopkins workers who are being paid poverty wages. What is amazing is the spirit of the workers. When you're on that picket line, you get a sense of joy and happiness because of their spirit of fighting against their oppression, but not just bemoaning it, doing
right.
something really active right. to change it.
Right.
You know, the CEO of Hopkins Hospital makes 145 times the amount that the average worker there makes.
Insane.
And they made $85 million. Hopkins made $85 million in profits in 2012. $85
million. It's a nonprofit.
Oh, well, we know how that works. Now, what they say it would cost.
They put $85 million back. That's how it works.
They say it would cost. Well, they also have $25 million worth of mortgage-backed securities in their bank accounts. But in any event, they say it will cost $3 million to give the workers a living wage, and they can't afford it. but they made $85 million last year. So I would urge all the listeners to go down to Broadway and Orleans Street, meet the people who are make Hopkins work and are now on strike so they can get paid a living wage rather than being on Medicaid and food stamps, and walk with them, and you will see happiness, and it will create it for you.
Great example.
Ooh, I love that. Yeah. That is part of it. You know, I mean, in the Civil Rights Movement, it was the same way. That people faced this great danger, but with songs in their heart and on their lips. You know, you get fire hosed, beaten up, and you sing at them. And people thought it was crazy, but it wasn't crazy. And there was power in that that we don't see, that people don't get sometimes. You know, that's like the people on the picket line. I think that's very, very important stuff, very important stuff. And there's a connection. And I was thinking about the connections between the wards in our Constitution and the Declaration of Independence to the Civil Rights Movement. You know, even though the understanding of those words might have been different from what the founders meant, they're really deeply connected. You know, I've read people in abolitionist writings who have said that those words of liberty kept inspiring every enslaved person in America to pursue freedom.
Absolutely.
Hear, hear. The same year that the Declaration of Independence was published, a fellow in Massachusetts named Lemuel Haynes, he was half black, half white,
yeah.
He published his own work on liberty and freedom and the abolition of slavery based on the words in the Declaration of Independence. They were inspiring to him and to many, many other people, as you've mentioned.
Folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. It's time to talk about happiness and pleasure and EAA and your support for the station. Stay with us. All right, folks, welcome back. Good to have you here with us. The same voices are on during the pitch. The same voices are on talking about happiness here on the Mark Steiner Show. And it's always good to have them with us, Alex Boston and Dr. We're all sitting here together, and it's good to have us all in the studio, and Jeff Singer and Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, 410-319-8888, continue pledging. This is a story that came in. Let me just read this story about happiness and see how this fits into it. Actually, my wife sent this in. She said, the story about when she apologized to our pet sitter, Mary, because we have animals, we want to go away, and she comes in and sits in the house. And she said about the fact that her home is not as grand as many of the ones she works. We live in a smaller house.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a gigantic mansion. And like close. And she said, back to Valerie, but your home has some very charming things. For example, you have the sunrise, which you can see out of our front window. This gorgeous sunrise coming up over the hills that you see every day.
Because none of the mansions are blocking that view.
Blocking that view. That's it. They're not blocking that view. No, every morning I get up, the first thing I do, because my youngest daughter lives with her mom in Georgia, every morning I get up with my cell phone, I take a picture of the sunrise.
Aww.
And I mail it, send it to my daughter. That's what how I start every day. Send her a picture of the sunrise. You know, that to me is happiness.
Wow.
And connection. Right?
It's beautiful.
That is.
410-319. No, no, no. We're talking about happiness. I'm all so confused. Right. I will say 410-319-8888. Call and pledge anyway. So, serious question here, though, is how do you think that what started this happiness in the Declaration of Independence, what is that, even that notion of happiness, the fact that it's in this document, what do you think it means for us now? What it means for the kind of the soul of the people of our country and ourselves that notion of happiness is in us because it's there? Is there a connection? Just the idea that every kid grows up with the notion of pursuit of happiness and doesn't get into, oh, it's a pursuit, it's not happiness, but that word is there. What does that mean anything?
I mean, I think that it certainly does have meaning. And unfortunately, more often than not, people have internalized that to mean the pursuit of material things. And I think that's something that, to the extent that we can raise awareness and, you know, help people understand that their happiness isn't really connected to the acquisition of material things, you know, we would be creating a better society. I think that's where we want to go.
And so the question is, you know, as we have these kind of, when we look at all the stuff that we do on this program all the time, and we, you know, we're always exposing the inequality that exists in gender, housing, race, food insecurity, all the issues that we raise here, we're constantly, and so how can we make sure that everyone can kind of pursue happiness? I mean, these aren't big policy ideas, are they? I mean, so how do we begin to develop this greater kind of community sense that allows us to do that?
It's still a state of consciousness. I mean, I'm not sure how else to say it. You know, with my children, every night we do this affirmation.
What do you do?
Where I was at an academic conference several years ago, and it was at a business hotel and at a Marriott. And at the bottom of the hotel key card, it said, walk in like you own the place. And my children must have been 3 and 5 at the time, and they're now 8 and 10. But I went back to the desk and said, can I have another one of these? And she said, what's wrong? And I said, no, I just want another one that has the same expression on it. And so I took those two keys home and I framed them to put them in my children's bedroom.
Oh, wow.
And so at night, after we do our prayers, we finish that ritual by affirming that particular statement, where I always look at both of them and I say, and we always, and they respond, walk in like you own the place. And so for me, it's not about gathering these material possessions, but I want them to know that whatever space they walk into, that they should feel comfortable and they should be happy in that particular space, especially in the midst of issues of inequality, race, you know, gender, whatever that may be, that they deserve to be happy in whatever space they want to be in.
That's very powerful. Lucky kids.
I'll let you know how it works out.
Lucky kids. So I'm wondering again how we really get back to the idea of changing this notion of happiness in America. What are the things that can be done? I mean, you know, you talk about walking the picket line. I'm curious what you think we have to move in, because that part of the alternative to what goes on in our society that we don't like, that we consider oppression and stuff, we always talk about the environment, are things that we can do as alternatives in the way we live our lives and what we build, right?
Oh, for sure. The struggle against the privatization of public housing, for example, we'll turn to that for a moment. We are working with the public housing residents, the tenants, to create a new form of ownership there. Rather than having the housing authority sell these buildings to private developers who will use our tax dollars to make profits on them, there's a great alternative. Let the residents own the buildings and make sure that forever they're kept out of the speculative housing market. And this would help give more power to those residents and make sure that all the money that goes into the buildings actually goes for the benefit of the buildings and the residents, not to Wall Street folks and the investors and the tax credits and so forth. All of that is so unnecessary. We can create structures that produce happiness. But I think we have to do both. It's partly a consciousness issue and it's partly a matter of the structures. And we have to change the structures.
And I would agree. I think you do have to change the structures. And I think that necessarily involves going up against the system and struggling with like-minded people to really get at the heart of those issues with the people who make decisions. And I think I would say, again, another part of this happiness is going beyond yourself and your comfort zone and engaging with people and communities that you might not have a natural connection to. And I think if you do that as an individual, you not only learn something about yourself, but I think you increase your happiness. I think you increase sort of the collective happiness, and you're helping to build communities and bring communities together that have been separate.
You know, I was thinking about this, and first of all, I think Victor Halliday kind of came up with an idea for us to talk about the pursuit of happiness. I'm glad he did, because it's been a very important conversation. Oh, he's here. I just say, you know, as we're wrapping up here a little bit, I want you all to call in a 410-319-8888 to make your pledge, and tell us what you think about the notion of happiness is, and we'll read it on all your thoughts on the air. After you make your pledge of 410-319-8888, because we want to hear what makes you happy and what how happiness fills you up with the station and your lives. 410-319-8888. Stay with us. Make those calls.